All right, brothers and sisters, we're ready to begin our first class this morning. Our speaker is Brother Gary Cousins. The theme of Brother Cousins' class this week is Nehemiah, Spiritual Leadership in Challenging Times. Today's class is entitled Working as a Spiritual Mason. Brother Gary.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters. It's getting better, a little bit more awake this morning maybe than yesterday, a little bit more with it. The next 2 days, today and tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Nehemiah chapter 3. And Nehemiah chapter 3 is my favorite chapter in the book of Nehemiah. Now, actually today is more of a preamble to Nehemiah chapter 3, and then tomorrow we're actually going to get into the nitty-gritty and the details of Nehemiah chapter 3. These two classes used to be one class. I've given this series once before at Bozeman about 7 or 8 years ago, and I got some feedback from my coach, who is my wife, saying you need to split that class into two. You've got too much information. You go too fast. So I've split it into two, so we'll see how this goes. And today we're going to be talking about working as a spiritual mason. And when we belong to an ecclesia, we don't really think of ourselves, do we, as construction workers and tradespeople. But metaphorically in Scripture, that's who we are. We are preparing stones. We are squaring them. We are shaping them. We are rounding them. We're mixing and preparing mortar of the right consistency that will hold those stones in place through all of the storms of life. We are constantly repairing areas where that mortar has been cracked or is falling out. We're patching those cracks, those fissures. We're repairing the chinks in the wall that occur over time. We're renovating, we're building additions and expanding that wall. We are building walls. We are building ecclesial walls. We are spiritual masons. And walls tell a story, don't they? Walls are a witness to the events that take place within its enclosure. The construction of the wall tells a story about the people that built it. Its state of repair speaks to the industriousness or to the neglectfulness of the people. Its exactness talks about the detail and the meticulousness of the people that built it. Its engravings talk about the mindset of the people, their character, their thinking. And its decoration talks about the culture, the spirituality of the people. And there is no wall that tells a greater story than the wall of Jerusalem. The wall of Jerusalem was broken down and it was repaired many times. And we're not going to look up all of these passages. We may look up one or two to demonstrate this principle. But when you analyze all the times that the wall was built up and it was broken down, there's a pattern that emerges. And the pattern is this. During times of spiritual decline, the wall either collapses or is destroyed. And during times of spiritual reform, the wall is either rebuilt, fortified, or expanded. During times of spiritual decline, it collapses or is destroyed. And during times of spiritual reform, it's rebuilt, fortified, or added on or expanded. Turn, if you will, to 2 Chronicles chapter 25. We turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 25, we see this principle coming out. 2 Chronicles chapter 25 talks about Amaziah. And in 2 Chronicles chapter 25, we're going to read first of all at verse 2. Verse 1, Amaziah was 25 years old, so Amaziah is king. Verse 2, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a perfect heart. Now skip down to verse 14. Now it came to pass after that Amaziah was come from the slaughter of the Edomites, that he brought the gods of the children of Seir and set them up to be his gods, and bowed down himself before them and burned incense unto them. Not a good thing, right? And so what happened? Verse 23, and Joash, the king of Israel, took Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, at Beth Shemesh, and brought him to Jerusalem, and brake down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. So there we see spiritual decline. The wall is broken down. Conversely, let's look at King Manasseh. Turn over a couple pages to 2 Chronicles chapter 33. In 2 Chronicles chapter 33, we see Manasseh starts out pretty bad, but he reforms himself. Manasseh, 2 Chronicles 33, verse 1, was 12 years old when he began to reign. Verse 2, he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, like unto the abominations of the heathen whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. Now let's come down to verse 9. Not only was he evil, he was evil, more evil than all the others. So Manasseh made Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to err and to do worse than the heathen whom the Lord had destroyed before the children of Israel. And so Manasseh was one of the worst kings that existed. In fact, he made the inhabitants of Jerusalem to err greater than the heathen that were around them. But what happens? Verse 12, and when he was in affliction, he besought the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers and prayed unto him, and he was entreated of him and heard his supplication and brought him again to Jerusalem into his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord, he was God. Now after this, he built a wall without the city of David on the west side of Gihon in the valley, even to the entering in at the fish gate, and compassed about Ophel, and raised it up a very great height, and put captains of war in it, in all the fenced cities of Judah. And so we see that principle brought out, right? During times of spiritual decline, the wall falls down. During times of spiritual prosperity, the wall is built up. The integrity of the wall becomes then a barometer of the spiritual health of the community that that wall encloses. And the most important thing is not the physical wall itself, is it? It's the people that built the wall. The people actually become the stones of the wall. And the wall cries out to us with the story of the character of those people who make up the wall. And Nehemiah recognized that principle in Nehemiah chapter 3, didn't he? He recognized that he was not just rebuilding a wall. He was building a people. He was molding them. He was shaping them. He was building a people who were to be polished stones in the foundation of the wall that was to surround or will surround heavenly Jerusalem. Nehemiah was building a wall of people, lively stones that would span eternity. The wall which Nehemiah was building is the wall that we continue to build today. And so this morning we want to look at our role as spiritual masons and what the walls that we may be building tell about us who are the builders. So I'd like you to begin in Proverbs chapter 24. Proverbs chapter 24, and there's a number of passages here in the Proverbs that we're going to look at. Proverbs chapter 24, beginning to read at verse 30. It says there, I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding, and lo, it was all grown over with thorns and nettles and covered with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it, and I received instruction. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. And so in this particular case, we see a wall that had fallen down due to neglect. And I think there's a parable here, and this is a quote taken from the John Murray commentary, and it reads as follows. The field and vineyard are more than the man's earthly possessions. His neglect brings barrenness and desolation to the garden of the soul. As in other parables, the thorns and nettles are those that choke the good seed and are hurtful and offensive to others. The wall is the defense which laws and rules give to the inward life and which the sluggard learns to disregard. The poverty is the loss of the true riches, tranquility, peace, and righteousness in the garden of eternity. And so it talks about the wall of he who is neglectful, the wall of he who is slothful, who is a sluggard, if you will, in a spiritual sense in the ecclesia. And the root cause is neglect and procrastination. In verses 33 and 34 from the Matthew Henry commentary, it says, he promises himself a little more sleep, a little more slumber, and then he will get up to do his business. Herein he deceives himself. It's kind of like us in the morning, right? Pressing snooze. Oh, nine more minutes, right? Nine more minutes comes, and oh, just nine more minutes, right? We press it again and again. The more a slothful temperament is indulged, the more it prevails. Let him sleep a while and slumber a while, and still he is in the same tune. It's never enough, right? Pressing the sleep button, pressing the sleep button once isn't enough. We got to press it twice, maybe three times, maybe four. Maybe our alarm goes off an hour early, so we can press it five or six times before we have to get up. Still, he asks for a little more sleep, yet a little more. He never thinks he has enough, and yet when he is called, he pretends he's going to come presently. Thus, men's great work is left undone by putting off a little longer, and they are cheated of all their time, and this is the key phrase, by being cheated of the present moments. We cheat ourselves of the present moments. Every time we press that snooze button, we cheat ourselves of the present moments. A little more sleep proves an everlasting sleep. Sleep on now and take your rest. The root cause of the problem is neglect and procrastination in the ecclesia, isn't it? That's why the wall falls down. Because when a problem arises, when a problem comes up in the ecclesia, when an opportunity exists, we don't jump on it and address it and get it done. We don't fix it right away. We let it fester. And then it becomes more than a little crack or a fissure. It becomes a breach in the wall of the ecclesia. Proverbs chapter 18, just back a couple pages in Proverbs chapter 18, reading there at verse 10. Proverbs 18 and verse 10. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it and is safe. The rich man's wealth is his strong city and has an high wall in his own conceit. Before destruction, the heart of man is haughty, and before honor is humility. Walls of conceit in the ecclesia, right? It's when we build a tower unto ourselves in the ecclesia. We contrast verse 10 with verse 11. In verse 10, the righteous, where do they run? Where's their safe haven? Their safe haven is with the Lord. It's the tower that God has built. But those who trust in the strength of their own arm, those whose strength is in their wealth and in their riches, they build a wall unto themselves. They build a wall around themselves in the ecclesia. They're those who think of themselves a little more highly than their fellow brethren and sisters. They're the ones in the ecclesia that only run in certain circles. They're not interested in helping others other than themselves. Proverbs chapter 25. Proverbs chapter 25, reading there at verse 28, it says, "He that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls." These are those who are reckless in the ecclesia, aren't they? They're reckless in their conduct in the ecclesia. They're those who destroy the foundation of relationships. They have no restraint. You know, I'll give you a couple of examples from some of the ecclesias that I have belonged to of some brethren who behave like this. There was an elder brother in one ecclesia. He sat in the same seat. It was in the second row back, right on the aisle. He was an older brother. He was well into his 80s. Very well-respected, very knowledgeable brother. But we had younger brethren who for the first time were giving Bible class. And when they were finished and they sat down and they opened up for discussion, this elder brother went up one side of them and down the other to the point where the young brethren in the ecclesia said, "You know what? We're not doing Bible class anymore. I'm not going to subject myself to that." That's being reckless in the ecclesia. There's a better way to give feedback, isn't there? Come across another brother who took great pride in saying, "You know what? I'm a straight shooter. You'll always know where you stand with me." And this brother would speak out at business meetings. And he would speak out and he would call people out and he would speak out so abrasively that some left the ecclesia specifically because of how this brother behaved. That's not building walls, that's tearing them down, isn't it? That's what happens when there's no wall of restraint. Isaiah chapter 59. Isaiah chapter 59 is a reprimand of the children of Israel. Verse 9, it says, "Therefore is judgment far from us, neither doth justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold obscurity, for brightness, but we walk in darkness." Here's the key verse. "We grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as in the night. We are in desolate places as dead men." And why was that? Why were they groping for the wall? Why could they not find the wall? Verse 12, "Because they were caught up in their transgressions that had been multiplied." Verse 13, "In transgressing and lying against the Lord and departing away from the God, speaking oppression and revolting, conceiving and uttering from the heart's words of falsehood." Judgment is turned away backward. And you know what the root cause of the problem was? You know what the root cause was? It's in verse 15. The truth had failed. They'd lost hold of what the truth really was and what the truth stood for. And so they wandered outside of the ecclesia. Their faith was failing. And when they realized it, they couldn't find their way back. They're like blind, groping for the wall, trying to feel for the wall of the ecclesia.
They wandered off. They had fallen away. They were lost in the darkness outside the ecclesial walls, and they were groping to find their way back. Ezekiel chapter 8. In Ezekiel chapter 8, it talks about a wall with a hole in it. Ezekiel chapter 8, beginning to read at verse 7, he says, "And it brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, there was this little hole, a little tiny hole in the wall. And he said unto me, Son of man, dig now in the wall." And so around that hole, all the mortar and all the stones had begun to crumble. And so he starts digging in the wall and he makes that hole bigger. And he finds that behind the hole there was a door. And he said unto me in verse 9, "Go in and behold the wicked abominations that they do here." So he makes the hole big enough so that he can open the door. And when he swings the door open, what does he see? "So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beasts and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed upon the wall round about." The walls tell a story, don't they? "And there stood before them 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel, and in the midst of them stood Jaazaniah, the son of Shaphan, with every man his censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. Then he said unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the chambers of his imagery. For they say, The Lord seeth us not. The Lord hath forsaken the earth." And so there's exhortation in that for ourselves, isn't there? The walls of our ecclesia tell a story. And if somebody was to take the hole that is in the wall of our ecclesia and break it open and look inside, what would they find? What would be there? If they were to drill a little hole in the sides of our houses at home and peer inside, what would they see? What kind of walls are we building? And what would the walls that we build, what story would they tell of the people that we really are? Turn a couple pages over to Ezekiel chapter 13. Ezekiel chapter 13, we're going to read at verse 10. Because they have seduced my people, saying peace and there was no peace, and one built up a wall, and others daubed it with untempered mortar. So they had built up this wall, and the wall had begun to crumble, and they were daubing it with this untempered mortar. So say unto them which daub it with untempered mortar that it will fall. There will be an overflowing shower, and ye, O great hailstones, shall fall. And a stormy wind will rend it. Lo, when the wall is fallen, shall it not be said unto you, Where is the daubing wherewith ye have daubed it? Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, I will even rend it with a stormy wind in my fury, and there shall be an overflowing shower in mine anger, and great hailstones in my fury to consume it. So will I break down the wall that ye have daubed with untempered mortar, and bring it down to the ground, so that the foundation thereof shall be discovered, and it shall fall. And ye shall be consumed in the midst thereof, and ye shall know that I am the Lord. Thus will I accomplish my wrath upon the wall, and upon them that have daubed it with untempered mortar, and will say unto you, The wall is no more, neither they that daubed it. Untempered mortar. What's the untempered mortar? We daub the wall of the ecclesia with untempered mortar when we tell ourselves what we want to hear. You know, it's when we have a problem in the ecclesia and it's very quick, we need to patch up the wall, and you know, we need to make it so that the facade of our ecclesia looks all okay. We don't want anybody else to know that we have that problem in our ecclesia. Let's just daub it up with this untempered mortar. Let's fix it up real quick so that, you know, it doesn't get out there. And so we create this facade that everything's okay. We We cover up issues. We sweep them under the carpet. And so when problems arise in the ecclesia, we never get to the root cause. We never deal with the issue forthrightly. We never deal with it scripturally. We lack the spiritual courage to take the right action that gets to the root cause of the problem. And we never make proper repairs to the walls of our ecclesia. And so when real difficulty comes, the ecclesia can't handle it. And the walls fall apart. Because all we've done is daub them with this quick fix, untempered mortar. What do the walls of our ecclesia, what story do they tell of who we are? David said a prayer in Psalm 51, and we're not going to turn it up, but his prayer that was that God would continue to build the walls of Jerusalem. That God would continue to build the walls of Jerusalem. Because building the wall is a perpetual process, right? It never stops. If we're not building the wall is regressing. As soon as we stop building, the wall begins to fall. The walls of our ecclesia must be in a constant state of repair. There is always something going on in the ecclesia that has to be addressed. There's something going on in the ecclesia that sometimes we have to build more walls. Sometimes we have to make them bigger because our ecclesia is growing, and that's a good thing. But we never stop building the walls of the ecclesia. As soon as we stop building, the ecclesia starts to die. And that's why it's important that we are spiritual masons. 2 Samuel chapter 5. In 2 Samuel chapter 5, we are introduced to the function of a mason. 2 Samuel chapter 5, and in 2 Samuel chapter 5, we have the example of David. And in 2 Samuel chapter 5, reading there at verse 11, it says, "And Hiram king of Tyre sent messengers to David and cedar trees and carpenters and masons, and they built David a house." So this was the building of David's house, not the temple. But notice there was carpenters and there was masons in verse 11. Now, if you have a margin and you have an Oxford Bible, in my margin, the Hebrew for masons, what does your margin say? My margin says, and I can't read my margin, it says, "Hewers of the stone wall," right? Hewers of the stone wall. That's what a mason is. They're a hewer of the stone wall. That's what the Hebrew word means, a hewer of the stone wall. That's what we are in the ecclesia. We are masons. We are hewers of the stone wall. So now let's go to 1 Chronicles chapter 22. We go to 1 Chronicles chapter 22, and there we have Solomon building the temple and David telling him about all of the things that he had prepared for the building and the construction of the temple for Solomon. 1 Chronicles chapter 22, we read there at verse 2. "And David commanded to gather together the strangers that were in the land of Israel, and he set masons to hew wrought stones to build the house of God." So the masons were critical in building the temple. They were critical in building the house of God. Now turn, if you will, over to verse 14. It says, "Now behold, in my trouble," David says to Solomon, "I have prepared for the house of the Lord 100,000 talents of gold and 1,000,000 talents of silver and of brass and iron without weight, for it is in abundance. Timber also and stone have I prepared, and thou mayest add thereto. Moreover, there are workmen with thee in abundance, hewers and workers of stone and timber, and all manner of cutting men for every manner of work." Notice if you have a margin there, what does it say for workers of stone? In the margin, it says masons, right? Workers of stone. Verse 16, "Of the gold and the silver and the brass and the iron, there is no number." And so David says, he says to Solomon, I've prepared all these things. I've got masons for you to build the temple. I've set aside and I've trained all the carpenters and all the workers in timber. And you want to highlight this, if you're a Bible mark, you want to highlight this in verse 16, because this is the message. Arise, therefore, and be doing, David says to Solomon. I've taken away all your excuses. He says, arise, therefore, and be doing. Don't be slothful in your work. You've got all the resources. You've got all the labor that you need to build this temple. Arise and get it done, and the Lord will be with you, David says. So how did that building process work? Let's go to 1 Kings. Go back, if you will, to 1 Kings chapter 5. 1 Kings chapter 5, reading there at verse 13, it says, and King Solomon raised a levy out of all Israel. And the levy was 30,000 men. And he sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month in courses. A month they were in Lebanon and 2 months at home. And Adoniram was over the levy. And Solomon had 70,000 that bear burdens. 70,000 that bear burdens. And 40,000 hewers in the mountains. So there were hewers in the mountains. So when you look at the work of a mason, you can really divide that up into three categories. There were hewers, there were masons, and there were stone squarers. And we see that in this passage here. So there were 40,000 hewers in the mountains. There were 80,000 men who were hewing the rocks out of the mountains. Beside the chief of Solomon's officers, which were over the work, there were 3,300 which ruled over the people that wrought in the work. So there was 3,300 supervisors that oversaw the work in verse 16. Verse 17, and the king commanded, and they brought great stones, costly stones, and huge stones to lay the foundation of the house. And Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders did hew them, and the stone squarers, so they prepared timber and stone to build the house. So you see the process, and this is the process that happens in the ecclesia with every one of us as we're brought into the ecclesia and as we try and find our place in the wall. It's like when we're baptized, we're like one of those great stones that are hewn out of the mountain, right? And then those stones are transported down with those 80,000 men. Sometimes it takes 80,000 to bring us to the ecclesia, doesn't it? Those 80,000 men bring that great stone down to where it's going to go in the wall. And then the stone squarers look at where that stone is going to go, and they square it off, and they round it off, and they make it, and they shape it so that it fits in the wall of the ecclesia. And then the masons are the ones that put the mortar around that stone and fit it into the wall and sit it there waiting for the next one to go on top of it. And that's how it works, isn't it? And that's the responsibility that each of us have for each other. We are hewers, we are masons, and we are stone squarers. And you know, you might think, well, I don't really have the talent. I don't really have the ability. That's not me, that's somebody else. And that's not the case. Turn to Exodus chapter 35. In Exodus chapter 35, we have the building of the tabernacle in Exodus chapter 35. And everybody contributed. Everybody could do something in the building of the tabernacle. All you had to have was the right attitude and a willingness to work, and the talent would be provided. Exodus chapter 35 and verse 10, every wise hired among you shall come and make all that the Lord hath commanded. That's in verse 10. Verse 21, and they came every one in whose heart stirred him up, every one whose spirit was willing, and they brought the Lord's offering. Verse 22, and they came, there was men, there was women. Verse 23, every man came, at verse 24, everyone made an offering. And the women in verse 25 that were wise-hearted did spin with their hands. All the women whose hearts stirred them up in verse 26. Even the rulers, verse 27, brought things for the building of the temple. And if they didn't know what they were doing, what did God provide? He provided Bezalel in verse 30. And Moses said unto the children of Israel, see, the Lord hath called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. And he hath filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom and understanding and in knowledge and in all manner of workmanship. And to devise curious works, to work in gold and silver and in brass, and in the cutting of stones to set them, and in carving of wood to make any manner of cunning work. And he hath put in his heart that he may teach. And so we need to seek out the Bezalels in the ecclesia, don't we? There's the every ecclesia has a Bezalel or two that needs to take on the role of training those that we might shape and form the stones to go in the wall of the ecclesia to make sure that from generation to generation, the wall of the ecclesia maintains its strength and stands firm.
Brothers and sisters, we are building an ecclesia.
There shouldn't be no walls down the middle of our ecclesia. In Ephesians chapter 2, he's talking about Jew and Gentile in Ephesians chapter 2, but the principle remains the same. Christ has broken down the middle wall of partition, hasn't he? We need to make sure that we don't put a middle wall of partition back up. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Talks about how we build the ecclesia. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 says in verse 10, it says, according to the grace of God which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. And so we have to be careful, don't we, about how we add on to the walls of the ecclesia. Excuse me. And we need to make sure that we're not rebuilding or building walls that go down the middle of the ecclesia between our brethren and sisters, but walls that go around them. Because each of us in the ecclesia is a work in progress. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. In 1 Peter chapter 2, we're identified there as stones. In particular, it says in 1 Peter chapter 2 that we're lively stones. Ye also as lively stones. Now, it says there in verse 5, we are built up a spiritual house. But we don't have a continuous tense in the English. But in the Greek, this is in the continuous tense. So it should better read verse 5, ye also as lively stones are being built up a spiritual house. We are all a work in progress. We are all being built up a spiritual house. Not one of us is perfect. We are not all the same size and shape. We're not all bricks. We are stones of all different sizes and shapes in the ecclesia. And we have to make sure that there's space for every one of us in the wall.
Does anybody know, or has anybody heard of the Church of the Holy Rood? It's kind of a funny name, but the church goes back about 10 centuries. It was actually founded in 1129. The church burnt down shortly after it was built, and it lay dormant until about 1414 when it was rebuilt again. The coronation of King James VI took place in this church on July the 29th, 1567. In 1656, a dividing wall was built to divide the church into equal sections. Now, I got a picture of the church, obviously, but I couldn't get a picture of the dividing wall that divided the church. But in 1656, you see where the green oval is here, that's where the wall was built that divided this church into two. And here's what happened.
An extreme and bigoted pastor, his name was James Guthrie, could not accept a more moderate colleague. Sides were chosen, and the fight began. The conflict raged until the town council built a wall dividing the sanctuary in half. So actually, this wall was built by the town council, and it divided the church in half. One church became two, and the two churches worshiped back to back. So what happened was, they divided the church in two, and on a Sunday morning, they all went through this door, and there was a pulpit built at this end, and a pulpit built at this end, and half of them turned to the right and went that way, and half of them turned to the left and went that way. And the church was divided into two by this wall.
That would never happen in Christadelphia, would it?
And that wall actually remained there for 279 years. It was finally torn down in 1935. You think of all the times that ecclesias have divided for the wrong reasons. You think of the walls that we've built between brethren and sisters. Yes, this is a very physical example, but it happens, doesn't it? And that's where our skillfulness as spiritual masons needs to come into effect in the ecclesia, so that we build bridges and not walls. So that we work together and we arrive at a common understanding so that we can move forward together. And we need to work as hard as it takes and as long as it takes to make that happen in our ecclesias. Because we are building the walls right now of New Jerusalem. The job that we have in each and every one of our ecclesias is to build stones that will properly fit into that wall. Garnished stones. The wall of God. The wall that will be called salvation, Isaiah 60 says, that will have an everlasting name upon it. The construction of that wall began with Adam and Eve. It was carried on with Nehemiah, and the work of Nehemiah is carried on today by you and I. Tomorrow we'll look at how those in the ecclesia in Nehemiah's day did building the wall of Jerusalem.